This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. Ice-T was one of the most controversial performers of the first wave of gangster rap. Gangster rap was despised by many who saw it as glorifying and glamorizing gangs, guns, drugs, and fast sex. Ice-T came under attack for his 1993 release Cop Killer, which critics claimed epitomized everything that's wrong with the music. But Ice-T says he raps about the truth of the life he once led. He has a new album, Greatest Hits, The Evidence, a collection of classic rap tracks from the last 15 years. Ice-T's voice and persona attracted Hollywood early on. He co-starred in the films New Jack City, Trespass, and Mnemonic, and has many television credits as well. This coming season, Ice-T joins the cast of the primetime NBC series Law & Order Special Victims Unit as Detective Munch's partner. Terry spoke with Ice-T in 1994, after the publication of his autobiography. Let's start with a rap that draws on Ice-T's life. This is That's How I'm Living from his album Home Invasion.
I was born in New Jersey. I said it before, but I guess nobody heard me. My mother died young. No sisters or brothers, I was the only son. When I was 12, my pops died too. What's a brother supposed to do? They sent me out west to live with my aunt. I guess they thought that was the best. But there was no love there. But growing with no moms, I guess I was prepared to live in a vacuum. The bedroom, the kitchen, the hall, the bathroom. I didn't leave home much. Didn't like LA. Didn't have no friends to trust. Got bused to a school. Blacks and whites, I guess the shit was cool. But by high school I changed. Didn't wanna bust, didn't wanna play the game. I walked to Crenshaw High. Shit was fly. I hooked up with a new crew. Some brothers that seemed like they knew what the fuck to do. You might call it a gang, but we call it a sect. And it was our own thing. The whole school was down. And one way or another, everybody fucked around. Whether hardcore or not, you wore the right color or your ass got shot. That's how I'm living. That's how I'm living.
When Terry spoke with Ice-T, she asked him whether he related to something called party rap, which was popular when he was just starting out.
When I first got off into rap, I tried to rap in the party rap type style because I was under the impression that's what rappers did. But it was kind of like I was faking it because I had never really rapped in parties and things like that. I was trying to rap like Sugar Hill Gang. And then I just started rapping about the life I was living. And that's how, you know, they call it gangster rap, but I call it reality-based rap, you know. And that's how that form of music got started.
Now, how did you start doing that? What was the turning point where you decided you weren't going to try to fake it and do the party raps, that you were going to talk about the life you knew?
Well, I made my first record ever I made was a record called Coldest Rap, and it was on a record called Cold Wind. One side was called Cold Wind Madness, and that was on an independent label. And it was very reality-based, but it was so early in rap. This was like 1982. And everybody else was rapping, you know, Run DMC style, LL Cool J and stuff. So I just was going along with the trend, you know, the way they go. But then after a while, my friends were like, you know, Ice, man, talk about what we do, man. Talk about how we live. And I did this song called Six in the Morning. It was a B-side. I really didn't think that that was what people wanted to hear. But the B-side turned out to be the biggest record and ended up being my identity, really.
Could you do a couple of lines from that?
What, six in the morning?
Maybe not, huh?
Yeah, I could do it. You know, okay. I mean, it went six in the morning, police at my door, fresh Adidas squeaked across the bathroom floor, out the back window I made my escape. Didn't even get a chance to grab my old school tape, mad with no music, but happy because free. And the streets to a player is the place to be. Got a knot in my pocket, weighing least a grand, gold on my neck, my pistol's close at hand. I'm a self-made monster of the city streets, remotely controlled by hard hip-hop beats. But just living in the city is a serious task. Didn't know what the cops wanted, didn't have time to ask.
Now, what was the very first time you took a microphone?
I was in the Army, and the record called Rapper's Delight had came out. And that was the first time I'd ever really heard it done to music. And on the B side of it, it was an instrumental. So here I am trying to say my rhymes over this instrumental. And they didn't really fit because they weren't written that way, you know. But that was my first attempt, and I came home attempting to do what, you know, they call rapping now.
Do you remember anything you said that very first time?
Well, I tried to say the street rhymes that I had been saying on the streets, you know, strolling through the city in the middle of the night, niggas on my left and niggas on my right. I used to sing like gang rhymes. I used to say rhymes that had to do with living in the streets, you know, and they just didn't fit, you know. But I started writing like party rhymes, like, my name is Ice-T, I'm here, I'm your DJ tonight, I'm here to rock y'all hard, I'm gonna rock you right, I'm gonna move you in, I'm gonna move you out, that kind of stuff. But that wasn't really what I was about, so I got back to the drama.
Right, right. And then did you feel like you had to find a different kind of music to fit it?
No, because music to me was the second thing. I was into the rhyming and the poetry that was involved. You know, the music always got in the way. And when we started doing the albums, I made a conscious decision never to make music that was danceable. Like, no, I didn't want to make dance-orientated beats. At this point now, we're starting to move more toward that, to try to make music that you can bounce to along with listening to the lyrics. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you've even criticized some hardcore rappers who abandon hardcore and do more dance music. What's wrong with dance music?
No, nothing's wrong with it, but, I mean, hardcore rap, it, to me, is the difference between pop and hardcore. Is with hardcore, you're saying exactly what's on your mind. You're being true to your feelings. Now, whether that pushes somebody the wrong way, that's just what being real is about. But there's a lot of people out there that want to get on the radio. So the radio dictates to you what you have to say. You have to be politically correct, so to speak. And when I see guys that at one time were very aggressive about certain things, and then I see them get softer to try to go onto the radio, I just, you know, to me that's weak, you know. But I never really pull names. I just say it to them because it kind of breaks my heart when I see somebody who used to be real dancing around on the video looking all stupid. Now, well, if that's what you do, don't get me wrong. If you are a pop rapper, I have no problem with that. You know, I love MC Hammer. I love Fresh Prince, and I love Kid and Play. That's them. But I'm talking about it's like tomorrow if you went out and you saw one of my videos, and all of a sudden I got on some like a yellow raincoat and I'm dancing around, and you know, you'd be like, "What are you doing?" That's what I'm talking about.
When you started making records, though, did you ever worry that all the traditional avenues that people hear records would be closed to you? It wasn't going to be in the jukeboxes or on the radio because of four-letter words.
I really didn't care because, to me, I did it to have fun. It was fun. It turned into being an occupation, but you got to remember, when I started rapping, nobody was making any money at it. There was Run DMC. It was like, now kids listen to it and say, "Oh, wow, I can get paid." Mm-hmm. But me, I did it for fun. And that was my only like prerequisite as far as doing music, and still is, in entertainment. It's like, if I can't have fun, I can't do it. I mean, that's one of the main reasons I pulled off Warner Brothers, is because I got to be able to do it my way. If I can't have fun, then why would I write a book or make a... I got to do it my way. That's what it's about.
When you're rapping, do you think of yourself as doing it in persona, or is that everything you say is you?
Oh, there's lots of ways to rap. Sometimes I want to become characters, and I can play a drug dealer or a drug addict. You know, I could become any person. You know, like in Cop Killer, I became a psychopath that went on a rampage. You know, that's not me. I'm not a psychopath that went on a rampage. I make records, you know. So it's like I become certain people. Other times, I say just crazy things. And other times I say things that are totally sincere and true. And I mean them. That's the hard part about understanding rap. It takes a real rap fan to really know. And within one sentence, I can go from fact to fiction to total fiction back to something I definitely mean.
Do you want your fans to know the difference between what's a character and what's really you?
Yeah, that's why when I do interviews and I talk to people, I don't come on and try to act hard and whoop whoop and all that old extra stuff. You know, I try to be normal. I mean, I drink milk, I play video games, I bounce my little baby on my knee. I'm a normal person. It's like, you know, I mean, it's like, I always compare it to like horror film writers and producers. If you met Stephen King, I don't know, would you expect him to reach over and pull your heart out of your chest, or would you think that he's just a writer? It's like that, you know. Everybody's capable of making up insane characters. I mean, I got a tough side to me, but I don't have to walk around and, you know, flaunt it. I don't need to do that.
Before you started rapping, were you really good at talking? Could you talk your way out of tough situations and talk your way to use that as a con, too, when you needed it?
Exactly. I'm a much better talker than I am a fighter. I'm not really into, you know, conflicts with people. And I went to school and I did fairly well in my last few years of school when I realized that education was something that was necessary. And yeah, I can talk. I mean, that's what I really do for a living now. So I've learned to even talk better since I've been in the music business. And I've been doing so many interviews and been in so many debates and stuff. So I read a lot more now and, you know, try to keep my skills up.
What have you been reading?
Well, we're reading right here. We're just reading America's Military Policy on Small Wars.
Is this in a magazine or is that a
book? No, it's a little book I just got here. This is the case of El Salvador. I'm into information stuff. Anything I can, I learn a word in this book. I just found this word. You know what PSYOPS is?
Spell it for me.
PSYOPS. P-S-Y.
Oh, Special Service. You tell me.
PSYOPS.
Right. Psychological Operations or something?
Yeah. So I'm learning about that. So you'll hear that in a rap. So I suck up information and try to put it back out on a beat because I know everybody ain't going to read this book. You know, they say, you know, there's a sad black joke. They say, how do you hide something from somebody black? You put it in a book. So I'm aware that a lot of, you know, my peers won't pick up books. So I pick them up and try to distribute the information another way.
Uh-huh. Now, you grew up in New York.
You know what that word meant, boy. I need to come kick it with you for a little while.
I end up interviewing the people who write these books. you grew up in New York, at least when you were very young.
Yeah,
New York.
Yeah, New Jersey.
And New Jersey, yeah. Thank you. And your parents died when you were young. Both of your parents were dead, I think, by the time you were 12. Can I ask how they died?
My mother died from a heart attack. And my father just died. I don't know. I just was called from school one day, and they're like, your pops is dead. And I'm like, oh. And then, you know, I never really got into his actual cause of death. He wasn't killed or anything, you know. He was, at the time, I knew he had going through a lot of pain, like arthritis and stuff like that. And they sent me from there. They told me, okay, well, you're going to come to L.A. for the summer.
Who's they? Who told you?
His sister, my aunt. Uh-huh. And then they were, then the next... I got there in like 1 week, then all of a sudden all my clothes popped up out there in boxes. So I kind of like got shipped to California.
So that's how you ended up in L.A.?
Yeah, living with my father's younger sister, who wasn't really a nice woman. She was kind of like a woman who said, I'm taking care of you because I got to shut up, sit down, all that. You know, so a lot of kids get moved around like that.
In your book, you said that she was a religious woman?
Nah, she wasn't a religious woman. She was a drunk. She was a social worker, a woman who would go around and analyze whether kids should stay in foster homes and stuff. And she was a terrible person. She's like old drunk. She wasn't nobody qualified to do anything like that. You know, I mean, it was rough on me, but I left there when I was like 17 years old because, you know, that's not the kind of environment you're supposed to be raised in where somebody's like, I'm taking care of you because I gotta and all that kind of stuff. You know, the word love and caring and all that's, you know, not even in the house.
So where did you go at 17?
I got my own place. I took a little money I was getting for Social Security. I was receiving Social Security check, $250 a month. And I got an apartment, which was $100 a month. I took another $100 and put it into the food and stuff I had to buy, and I had $50 extra. And I was still in high school.
Now, what high school were you going to?
Crenshaw.
This was in South Central?
Yeah, dead the center of that's the dead center of Los Angeles, Crenshaw High School.
Now, if I have this straight, you had been, I think, at the suggestion of your aunt, bused to an integrated school that you didn't like. And then you wanted to go to school in South Central?
Well, not really. She lived in a nice area of Los Angeles. They lived in an area called Baldwin Hills. She lived in a nice neighborhood. It's like upper class blacks.
Uh-huh.
And they just all the kids from that neighborhood got bused. I had no choice in busing to junior high. But when I got time to go to high school, a lot of those kids from up there wanted to continue to get bused to Palisades High, which was another, you know, white high school. But there was a Crenshaw High School was right across the street. It was walking distance, you know? So I was like, I don't want to catch the bus. I'll walk to Crenshaw. Everybody in the hills were like, ooh, you don't want to go to Crenshaw, though, you know? I'm like, why not, you know? And so I just walked across the street to the school that was closer.
Ice-T from a 1994 interview with Terry Gross. We'll hear more after the break. This is Fresh Air.
Back with Ice-T. So when you started going to Crenshaw High School in South Central, did you fall in with a different group of people than you'd been friends with before?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because in the hills, you don't have no friends, you know? I mean, there's not that many kids up in there. It's different, you know? They're, like, different kinds of kids, and I always was, I don't know why, but I've always been, like, really based in real people, you know? And I got to Crenshaw High School, and I hooked up with the gangs, you know, because the whole school was being operated by gangs. So these guys, I didn't look like I was joining a gang. I just looked like they were my friends, you know? And I was all more of an affiliate member. I never really would claim a particular set, but I was known by a lot of the gang members, and that particular school was a Crip school. And I didn't see anything wrong with them. I mean, I got a lot of love. I got more love from my friends and their parents than I ever got at home.
Is that part of the reason why you wanted to be with them?
Well, I had no options. I was just down there. So now here I am. I got my own apartment, and I'm starting to hang out with all these different kids. But it was real cool, you know what I'm saying? And their parents weren't like my aunt, uppity aunt. They were like, yo, you know, you cool, you know, you my baby now. And it was cool. And I would go over to their house and eat dinner and kick it with them. And it was real. There's a lot of love in the ghetto. It's a lot of love there, much more than upper class people. Upper class people lock their doors to most people. They don't cross it around.
It must have been good to have your own apartment. I mean, when you're in high school, somebody's got their own apartment. That's
makes you the man.
Yeah.
Well, that did happen. You know, all my friends and stuff I got, you know, I had the pad, and it turned me like into a leader, you know. So by just being a little bit in front of everybody else, I have friends always over. They could spend the night. It was funny. A lot of people would run away for like 2 days. I'm running away. I'm living with you. You know, you can't run away. Then their mother would come to my house and like, where's Nate? You know, like, get out of here. He's hiding in the closet. You know, it was interesting. But also what ended up happening, I ended up having a teenage pregnancy too.
A girlfriend?
Yeah, my girlfriend. She was in the 10th grade. But, you know, I'm Mr. Man at About Town, got my own apartment, whoop, now I got a baby. So, you know.
So what'd you do?
A little too much freedom, huh? At that point, I tried to stay down with the kid, but, that's when all of a sudden a bit of responsibility tried to hit me, and that's when I joined the military.
But that meant getting away from the baby, right?
Not really. It was just a job. It was a way of doing something. You know, at that point, I was on the streets. I was trying to go to technical college, but, you know, crime was knocking there at my door like, hey, man, you know, you only got 50 extra bucks. If you steal this car radio, you got 300 extra bucks. So what are you going to do? You know, you can't get a job at this point, you know. So it was a cross. And I just said, yeah, I'm going to try to go in the Army. And I went in the Army.
So are you still in touch with the woman who had the baby? And
oh, yeah,
definitely. With the baby?
Yeah, my daughter lives with me now.
Oh, she does?
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's cool and stuff, you know. But, you know, I went, when I came out of the Army, all my friends who were small-time little, you know, petty crooks now were bigger crooks, you know. And that's how I got off involved in all the different, you know, crimes, attempting to, you know, get over.
So what kind of crimes were they doing? With
everything. You know, you name it, we did it, you know. But basically everything that you could do without actually bringing bodily harm to somebody. I didn't hang around with a bunch of violent guys that were into, you know, hurting people and kidnapping, but they would rob a store, burglarize something, or steal something, and some of them sold drugs and things like that. But, you know, I never was, like, off into just, you know, the mugging type of a thing.
Mm-hmm. But did the crimes often turn to violence, like armed robbery? Did anyone ever have to use the weapon?
Yeah, well, crime always will turn to violence eventually. You know, I mean, even if you say, hey, I'm just going to sell weed, eventually if you're going to sell enough weed to get a car. But if you want a house, you got to sell much more of it. By the time you sell that, now you become a target for the lower rung criminals who are like, hey, I don't want to sell nothing. I just want to jack whoever got the money. So eventually, you're going to have to use your muscle. And, you know, if that's not what you want to do, you're going to have to find another occupation. Some people vile for the violence in it. I never wanted to do that, you know. And it don't make me no softer to say that. You know, a lot of kids are like, oh, well, that's soft. But down, I ain't, you know, I'm just real about it. You know, I mean, to me, violence is a last resort, and it's a protection thing. It's defense.
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Ice-T spoke with Terry Gross in 1994. His new album is Greatest Hits, The Evidence. Ice-T appears next season as a detective on the NBC drama Law & Order Special Victims Unit. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.